हरि ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 9, chapter 73. Sukadeva Goswami concluded, upon hearing their account of the great favor Lord Keshava had mercifully shown him, King Dharmaraj shed tears of ecstasy. He felt such love that he could say nothing. He could not say anything. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna Book, when they reached the precincts of Hastinapur, they blew their respective conch shells. By hearing the sound vibrations and understanding who was arriving, everyone immediately became cheerful. But the enemies of Krishna, upon hearing the conch shells, were very sorry. The citizens of Indraprastha felt their hearts become joyful simply by hearing the vibration of Krishna's conch shell, because they could understand that Jarasandha had been killed. Now the performance of the Rajasuya sacrifice by King Yudhishthira was almost certain. Bhimasena, Arjuna, and Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, arrived before King Yudhishthira and offered their respects to the king. King Yudhishthira attentively heard the narration of the killing of Jarasandha and the setting free of the kings. He also heard of the tactics adopted by Krishna to kill Jarasandha. The king was naturally affectionate towards Krishna, but after hearing the story, he became even more bound to him in love. Tears of ecstasy glided from his eyes, and he was so stunned that he was almost unable to speak. So that's the idea, is by hearing the pastimes of the Lord, hearing about the Lord, his wonderful interactions with the devotees, then that's what inspires one in devotion. So those who have devotion, then that increases. Those who don't have devotion, then it starts to chip away at our lack of devotion. Conclusion. Reverses in life are sent by Krishna to remind us to surrender to him. As soon as a king becomes rich in material opulences, he wants to dominate other nations by military aggression. Similarly, mercantile men want to monopolize a certain type of business and control other mercantile groups. Impelled by false prestige and infatuated by material opulences, human society, instead of striving for Krishna consciousness, creates havoc and disrupts peaceful living. Thus, men forget the real purpose of life, to attain the favor of Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, the reverses in life serve as indirect reminders to surrender to the Lord. So they're indirect, because the point is you can surrender while things are going nice. We tend not to. Right? So the materialist, he doesn't. Things go nice, he completely forgets, and he thinks everything's fabulous. And he tries to control the society so he gets more and more material benefit at the expense of everybody else's peaceful living. Right? Because the time that you should be engaged in Krishna consciousness, they're engaged in material benefit. So that's going to disturb others. Well, if everybody performs their occupational duties and then spends the balanced time in, you know, cultivating their Krishna consciousness, then there's not going to be a problem. Right? When they don't do that, they use the time, that means they disturb everyone else's peaceful condition. Right? It's one thing if just they're working, but no, they have to engage everybody else also. Right? So therefore, calling in the beginning, you know, the morning and the evening and on weekends and in vacation, all the time, they're engaging people because they want more, so no one can be peaceful. So, Chapter 74, the deliverance of Shishupal at the Rajasuya sacrifice. Pratigya, out of love, the devotee wants to glorify the Lord, and out of love, the Lord becomes an obedient servant of his devotee's desires. So, because of this common ground of affection, the devotee wants to glorify the Lord, and the Lord becomes the obedient servant of the devotee. So it goes, the reciprocation is very much. Adhyaya Prakashika. This chapter describes how Lord Krishna received the honor of first worship during the Rajasuya sacrifice, and how he killed Shishupal. After glorifying Lord Krishna, King Yudhishthira selected qualified Brahmins such as Bharadvaj, Gotama, and Vishishta to serve as the priests of the Rajasuya sacrifice. Because you're doing Rajasuya, which is the biggest of all of them that you can do. So naturally you're going to have the biggest priests. You know, so all these big names. And you know. Then many exalted guests of all the four social orders arrived to see the sacrificial performance. As the sacrifice proceeded, the ritual of first worship had to be performed, and the members of the assembly were called upon to decide who would receive this honor. Sahadev spoke up. Sri Krishna, the Supreme Lord, is indeed the most exalted person, for he himself comprises all the deities worshipped by Vedic sacrifice. In his role as the super soul in the heart, he arranges for everyone in the universe to engage in his particular kind of work, and by his mercy alone, human beings can perform various kinds of pious activities and receive the resultant benefits. One who worships him worships all living entities. Surely, Lord Krishna should be worshipped first. Nearly everyone in the assembly agreed with Sahadev's proposal and loudly congratulated him. Thus, King Yudhishthira happily worshipped Lord Krishna. After bathing his feet, says nearly everyone. Some didn't, but, you know, it didn't really matter, right? They were kind of, you know, everybody else just didn't care. Thus, King Yudhishthira happily worshipped Krishna. After bathing his feet, the king took the wash water and sprinkled it on his own head. And then on the heads of his wife, younger brothers, ministers, and relatives. Then everyone shouted, all victory, all victory, and bowed down to Lord Krishna as flowers rained down from above. Shishupal, however, could not tolerate this worship and glorification of Sri Krishna. He stood up from his seat and harshly rebuked the wise elders for choosing Krishna to be worshipped first. After all, he said, this Krishna is outside the system of Vedic social and spiritual orders and the society of respectable families. He follows no principles of religion and has no good qualities. Even as Shishupal continued to blaspheming him in this way, Lord Krishna remained silent. But many members of the assembly covered their ears and quickly left the hall, while the Pandava brothers raised their weapons and prepared to kill Shishupal. Lord Krishna stopped them from attacking, however, and instead used the Sudarshan disc to decapitate the offender. At that moment, an effulgent spark of light rose out of Shishupal's dead body and entered the transcendental body of Lord Krishna. Having lived through three births as the enemy of the Lord, Shishupal now attained the liberation of Sayuja merging into him by dint of his constant meditation upon him. That is because he's always meditating on the Lord that brought him to the transcendental position. King Yudhishthira then distributed profuse gifts to the respected guests of the assembly and to the priests. And finally, he executed the purificatory oblations known as the Prayaschitta Homa, which counteract errors made during the sacrifice. Yudhishthira's Rajasuya sacrifice having now been completed, Lord Krishna took his leave from the king and set off for Dwarka in the company of his wives and ministers. Duryodhana could not bear to see this abundant manifestation of King Yudhishthira's prosperity. But apart from him, everyone happily praised the glories of the Rajasuya sacrifice and of the Lord of all sacrifices, Sri Krishna. So it's also interesting to notice that it's just about the important elements of how Krishna's dealt with in the culture. Right? We don't see here in Bhagavatam the details of the sacrifice. That'll be in some other scripture like that. And one who knows sacrifices know how these things go. But he just pointed out the main things. you know, that preliminary, the worship of Krishna, then the honoring of all the different guests, and then within the end ceremony, the aspect of prayaschitta, counteracting errors, because in that then you worship Vamanadev, right? That's part of the process. And so that then is given, and then Krishna departs, and everyone's glorifying, and like that. So that aspect is there. We don't see that it gets into detail about the sacrifice itself, because that's not actually important in appreciating the relationship between Krishna and the devotees. Right? That's not necessary.
So every sacrifice must conclude with prayaschitta,
no? Every sacrifice concludes with prayaschitta, yes. Like that. It's called the Yudhichya Karma. It means it's the concluding activities, but within that, then the prayaschitta is your name. Because the prayaschitta means that you're taking shelter of the Lord, that whatever hasn't gone nicely, then by His grace it will be. Shlokanasharanam. Summary of verses. Right? So it means the aspect of that surrender to the Lord, that's what makes the prayaschitta. Shlokanasharanam, summary of verses 1-16. Mars Yudhishthira performs the Rajasuya sacrifice. Actually, we are fit to be punished by you, but the wonder is that instead of punishing us, you so kindly and mercifully accept our orders and carry them out properly. But because of the devotion, Krishna comes and takes care, even though they feel so many mistakes are made, things are improper, their material attachment, all these things they will consider. So they need to be corrected for all that. But instead, Krishna is just coming kindly and then interacting with them. Everyone thoroughly knew the position of King Yudhishthira because he was a great devotee of Lord Krishna. No accomplishment was extraordinary for him. So that he's doing the Rajasuya sacrifice, that's not the amazing thing. It's because he's a devotee of the Lord. What can't be accomplished? Right? Verses 17-29, Krishna receives the first worship. Everything is an emanation of Krishna's energies. Krishna is present as the Supersoul in every living being. And if we can satisfy Him, then automatically every living being becomes satisfied. Right? So that's why He's the first worship, because by satisfying Him, then everyone's satisfied. Well, if you worship anyone else, then okay, you've satisfied the demigod, you may get that specific benefit, but that's where it ends. Verses 30-37, Shishupal criticizes the Lord. 38-46, Shishupal attains the Lord. Anyone who fails to immediately leave the place where he hears criticism of the Supreme Lord or his faithful devotee will certainly fall down, bereft of his pious credits. Right? Because since we can see it's about Krishna, the devotee is surrendered to Krishna, and because Krishna reciprocates, because the devotee is surrendered, Krishna surrendered to the devotee. So therefore, that's the most important thing. Here's the Supreme Lord. And for him, it's that surrender to the devotee. So then criticism of the devotee, that itself is very disturbing to Krishna. Does that make sense? So if there's any fault in devotional service, it's because of the aspect of what is improper for serving and pleasing Krishna. That's the fault, because then Krishna is not surrendered, and we're not surrendering to Him. So this aspect of that reciprocation is not going on, and that's the perfection of the living entity's position. Right? So that's what's at fault, not actually the person themselves or the soul. The soul is transcendental, the conditioning, what does it matter? So what's the problem is, the process of devotion is not going as smoothly as it should. That's where then one is seeing the fault. That's what's to be corrected, if you're in a position to correct it. If you're not, what's the point of pointing it out? You may contemplate it, see it, so that you're careful for yourself. You don't get distracted by it. But that's all the further it's necessary. But then attributing that to the person, and then therefore then taking up the element of justice and all these other things, then that's a waste of time. It's not pleasing to the Lord. We may say it is, because if it's not just, how can this, that? Because we're taking that our sense of morality is what makes Dharma. And the real Dharma is morality, rather than real Dharma is pleasing Krishna. Right? So we always have to see is pleasing Krishna is the purpose of Dharma. Right? And so we and so since Dharma is to please Krishna, you know, Upadharma is to support Dharma. So that means anything in Upadharma is also supposed to be to please Krishna. But we can't say that because the Upadharma is not followed, therefore you're not pleasing Krishna. Because the point is where's the Dharma in between? Because Upadharma is supporting Dharma. So if we just go straight, my Upadharma is worship of Krishna, but how? As Dharma. And then according to Dharma, what is my duties? Because Upadharma doesn't get into that. Upadharma only addresses those points that are necessary for a particular social situation. Does that make sense? Means persons in a particular region or locale, because of the nature of the area, the nature of their mentality, you know, therefore their food, their clothes, all these things, they have their certain local, regional, moralistic concepts for them as a group to work together. So the point is those are very, very, subjective to that group. They're not objective like Dharma is. Dharma is how everyone's supposed to follow. Then you get down into specifics. Because here it's just the specifics. It's not about the higher principle. Does that make sense? So we have to be careful is that when we're seeing these things is that it's about the devotional point. Not that the Dharma or Upadharma is devotional. It's only when you connect it to Krishna it becomes devotional. Right? So Dharma is the best thing to connect because it's the most universal. And Upadharma will be specific for the locale. So unless it's seen in light of Dharma and Bhakti, then it basically has no position. But we can't claim that it creates Bhakti. Right? Because that's then where the position that, you know, the justice and all these things become so important. But it's no, bhakti is what's important. So, 47 to 54, Krishna returns to Dwarka. Although King Yudhishthira and his brothers were unwilling to have Lord Krishna leave Hastinapur, Krishna arranged to take permission from the king to return to Dwarka, and thus he returned home along with his queens and ministers. Verses 1 to 16. Maharaj Yudhishthira performs the Rajasuya sacrifice. Sukadeva Goswami said, having thus heard of the killing of Jarasandha and also of Krishna, Almighty Krishna's wonderful power, King Yudhishthira addressed the Lord as follows with great pleasure. Sri Yudhishthira said, all the exalted spiritual masters of the three worlds, together with the inhabitants and rulers of the various planets, carry on their heads your command, which is rarely obtained. That you, the lotus-eyed Supreme Lord, accept the orders of wretched fools who presume themselves rulers is a great pretense on your part. O all-pervading one, but of course the power of the Absolute, the Supreme Soul, the primeval one without a second, is neither increased nor diminished by his activities, any more than the sun's power is by its movements. Right? So Krishna does all these seemingly human activities where he puts himself under the care of others, but it doesn't diminish his position as the Supreme Lord. Right? Just as the sun moving doesn't diminish its power. So Krishna, even though he performs all these wonderful pastimes, it doesn't diminish his position as the Supreme Lord. Right? So even though it appears that he's putting himself under Maharaj Ugrasena and other members of the community or under the, you know, various great personalities, the great sages come and all this. Narad Muni comes, he worships, he does all the things. It's his pastime, but it doesn't mean that he and his position get our compromise. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, Yudhishthira said, my dear Krishna, O eternal form of bliss and knowledge, all the exalted directors of the affairs of this material world, including Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and King Indra, are always eager to receive and carry out orders from you. And whenever they are fortunate enough to receive such orders, they immediately take them and keep them on their heads. O Krishna, you are unlimited. And although we sometimes think of ourselves as royal kings and rulers of the world, and become puffed up over our paltry positions. We are very poor in heart. Right? So we may say we're very wealthy and powerful, but Yudhishthira Maharaj is pointing out, unless that's applied in devotion, then it's actually very poor in heart. Your externals may be very wealthy, but you yourself are actually within yourself as a personality are very poor. Right? So that's where real wealth is in the qualities that one has. You have that, then everything else will follow. But if you don't have, it's just a matter of time before whatever you have, you lose. Actually, we are fit to be punished by you, but the wonder is that instead of punishing us, you so kindly and mercifully accept our orders and carry them out properly. We are all very much surprised that your lordship can play the part of an ordinary human being, but we can understand that you are performing these activities just like a dramatic artist. Your real position is always exalted, exactly like that of the sun, which always remains at the same temperature during both the time of its rising and the time of its setting. Although we feel the difference in temperatures between the rising and setting sun, the temperature of the sun never changes. You are always transcendentally equipoised, neither pleased nor disturbed by any condition of material affairs, right? So any material position doesn't bother him. Because for him, what's important is the relationship with the devotees. So the situations they're in, that's not what's actually a disturbance for him. The relationship remains. It goes on very nicely. So in the same way, the devotee can be unaffected and always absorbed in the Lord. You are the Supreme Brahman, the personality of Godhead, and for you there are no relativities. Right? So you don't have the dualities, you don't have these things. They exist, but they have no effect. Right? And nothing is relative on another. It's the absolute platform of how it's seen in connection with him. Does that make sense? So for the devotee, there's no relativities also, because everything is judged by the Lord. Well, if we're not including the Lord, then everything's relative. Something's better or less depending upon how its situation in connection to the another thing, including the situation and the people involved. So everything's all interrelated with each other. But the Lord is transcendental. So therefore, only when it's connected to Him, then it takes on the real nature. And when it's not, then we call it within the relative. Right? So therefore theory of relativity, how all these things are there, but what's missing is its connection with the Lord. Mm-hmm. Because that defines everything. That's where the measurement comes in. Mm-hmm. Right? In other words, you can create relative measures. Right? But the point is there's an absolute measure. So when you measure it there, then all these other subservient relativities now find their position and balance. Sometimes, yes.
Sometimes even devotees, they get very uncomfortable when we present that there is an absolute statement and absolute measurement.
And do you find at that time that they start bringing you drinks?
No.
And with crocodile grins ask you to drink it? No, okay, then you're doing better than Socrates.
And because apparently everybody likes to speculate, and this absolute system puts everything in its own place.
Yes.
But that means we have to perform our duties. We can't really.
Yes, but why do they want to perform their duties? Or why?
For different reasons.
Yes. But what will be the goal of that? Means, okay, they get a goal from that. They want to be able to speculate more, or they want to be able to engage in more, let's say, economic activities or social activities or, like this. But what is it ultimately they want to gain from that?
Happiness.
Yeah. So the thing is it's like what we were seeing in Vedanta Sutras, that it's the same philosophy. It's just that they're in the illusion that those things are what's giving them happiness. They don't realize this, the potency of money is what gives them happiness, not the pieces of paper. Right? If you have those pieces of paper and you can't buy anything with it, then it doesn't make you happy. So it's that potency, that's Krishna. You know, then the interaction of the senses and the sense objects or the social positions and people appreciate, that's all Krishna. He's the potency there. So they're all worshipping Krishna, just that they're not recognizing that as Krishna. That's the difficulty. And because of that, that's what's mine. But otherwise, the activities are the same. So all we're saying is because of that absolute position, you add Krishna into these processes that you're using. And then you get both. You're looking for that. You're going through the mechanics of let's say, an economic endeavor. And those mechanics, if performed properly and all that, then they naturally give a result. But now if you think that they're separate from Krishna, and that, you know, if you think of Krishna that the money won't come, they forget that that's what they're missing, is that the element of the money that they actually like is Krishna. So therefore, they can remember Krishna while performing this mechanical endeavor. And that way, then, they get the results of the mechanical endeavor, but the most important, they get Krishna. And ultimately, that's the only thing going to make them satisfied, because no matter how much money they make, no matter how much sense gratification, facilities, family, social prestige, it'll all be lost. And next life, you have to start over again. So that's the difficulty, is that performing activities not connected to Krishna are still connected to Krishna, but you don't get the benefit of that connection because you don't recognize it. Does that make sense? Let us say, by accident, the husband does something proper, right? And, you know, and then he figures out that it was proper, you know, because of some reaction from the wife. And then he claims that now he's done something proper and he should get the, you know, the natural benefits of that. But with that attitude, will he get the benefits? No. Well, if he had said nothing in that, then he might have gotten something. But now if he had been conscious of that endeavor and the resulted gain, that's where then the proper relationship happens. So that's all we're saying, is add in the absolute transcendental personal position. Because that's actually what's going on. So whatever they're wanting, they can do that in connection to Krishna. It's due to lack of understanding this aspect of the philosophy, as given in the Chatur Shloki and Gita and in Bhagavatam, that they can connect out all whatever they're doing to Krishna. But the point is that it's the connection to Krishna that gives it its value. Because the other things aren't of value to the soul and are temporary. But in any case, they want them, they can get them. You want it, you get it. So we're not saying something different from what they're saying. That's what was being pointed out by the Vedanta Sutra. They're not saying anything different, they're just leaving Krishna out of it. Well, we're saying it with Krishna. So, you know, and as they go and they become purified by that process of connection to Krishna, then their taste will change. You know, be upgraded. And since it's the taste that they're trying to get, as long as they're getting taste in something more refined or something more spiritual, then they don't mind. Their worry is that I won't get taste from the spiritual. You know, so I have to get the taste from the material. They don't understand the material taste they're tasting is still Krishna. But it's called material because they're not connecting it to Krishna. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. The anxiety in many times by studying philosophy, we know that result comes from Krishna. But then if we follow karma, means cause and effect, then result comes from our karma. So we project that, and then we see that we believe that it will come, but when it's going to come, that's a big anxiety.
But can they say when their karma will fructify?
Well, more or less, it's like a pattern. It's more easy to see.
In one sense it is, but there's also the point of what you do this life, you get next life. So we're looking at it. I'm working now in, my, let's say, my business or something, or I'm making this endeavor to make a party for a friend, or, you know, I'm trying to, you know, whatever it is that we're field we're trying to do. So, and you're getting results. We'll attribute it to what I'm doing now, but technically it's coming from what you did before. Otherwise, if it came from what you did now, everybody doing that would always get this, the proper result. But we see that some two people do exactly the same thing. One gets the result, one doesn't. That's because the one that gets the result, he's already done last life the proper karma, and now he's getting. What he's doing now is creating your karma for next life. But because he works in that field of karma, these are the natural activities he likes to do. So because of his endeavor last lifetime, that gives him the nature this lifetime to work in that same field of karma. So therefore, working in that field, he thinks he's getting the result from the work he's done now. But it's not. You know, it's just like you're going to work during the week, and you're also buying things and eating and doing all that. But you can't connect this week's work with the money you're spending. Like that. That's the thing. But so we're thinking that I'm in control of karma, but that's how it's designed. But in actuality, they can't say when the fruit of that will come, because if it's Krishna conscious, Krishna's giving it. But if I do it on my own, then Krishna's not giving; it's karma's giving. But who's giving the potency to karma to give it? It's still Krishna. Super soul is still sitting there. You recognize him or not, he's still sitting there. You remember him or not, he's still sitting there. You think you're doing it or not, he's still the one that's giving the results. So all we're doing is that if you understand that, then whatever you're doing, then you get what you want. Right? Until you figure out what actually you should want. You know, it's just like kids. They play all kinds of stupid stuff and that until they figure out that, you know, there's more important things to play with, like money and social status, and, you know, like that. You know, just as temporary, just as breakable, you know, like that. But we're just adding in Krishna. But when you understand the three Purushas and how, and Krishna, how he's beyond the Purushas. So when you understand the Purushas, the material energy, the Jiva, and Krishna beyond it, then all that starts to make sense. We just see the Purushas, we don't fully understand, because otherwise why it's going, we get the mechanics. That's what we see, is that people, even if they accept the Lord, they accept up to the Purusha. And that's as far as they get. And so, therefore, it's not specifically, it's, he's carrying out Krishna's will. And so, therefore, this aspect of where does will go, because it's not him, so they present it to dead matter, because it's not going to complain. And it makes it easier for us, because our position better, you know, like this and that. But actually, it's only when you see all of that, then it all starts to make very proper sense. Does that make sense? Yeah. It's okay? So it's just taking what they're doing, showing what they're looking for in what they're doing, and then taking it forward into, you know, the proper understanding of Krishna consciousness. That's the meaning of upanaya, to bring near. Right? Then you have the conclusion. Yes.
As Kulshekar Maharaj put it, that instead of surrendering to Krishna, we surrender to some person who is the head of some few meager villages. Mm-hmm. So people don't even take to that part, that I am performing karma, that's why I am getting results. My boss is giving me results. So
Boss is giving me the results, yes. Yeah, okay. So that's the thing, we think it's the boss giving you the results. No, it's karma. Yeah. Yeah, so it's just that taste in, that there's a taste in speculation, right? But there's also a taste in understanding the transcendental position. And the difference in material taste and spiritual taste is highly different. So that's the advantage. If you're already working with conclusion, what's left? Taste. Actual taste. While speculation, you have to work very hard, and then no guarantee you'll get taste, because unless you come up with something that has good logic and other things to it, how you get a taste from it? Because if you're getting a taste from something that's not logical, doesn't make sense, doesn't work, that's called crazy. Right? People who function like that, they put them into, you know, institutions. So it's only the people that work within the concept of the laws to some, you know, what's agreeable amongst everybody, then they're there. If you're outside of that, you go to the, you know, crazy place. Right? Does that make sense? So taste is the real thing, not speculation or the results of food and sense gratification. They don't actually give much of a taste. The taste in Krishna consciousness, now that gives solid taste. So, Maharaj Yudhishthira continued, "O unconquerable Madhava, even your devotees make no distinction of I and mine, you and yours, for this is the perverted mentality of animals." Sugriva Goswami said, "Having said this, King Yudhishthira waited until the proper time for the sacrifice was at hand." Right? So he doesn't say it's I and mine, it's Krishna's. And so I'm Krishna's, I have particular duties to perform, so therefore in my position I perform these duties in this context. So it's not because it's mine I deal with it, it's because it's my duties in my situation. Does that make sense? So that will be consistent. Otherwise, as long as I think it's mine, I work with it. When I think it's not mine, I don't work with it anymore. Right? So. Then, with Lord Krishna's permission, he selected suitable priests, all expert authorities on the Vedas, to execute the sacrifice. Footnote 6. Sridhar Swami explains that the proper time for the sacrifice mentioned here was the spring. Okay. He selected Krishna Dvaipayana, Bharadvaja, Samantu, Gautama, and Asita, along with Vashishta, Chyavana, Kanva, Maitreya, Kavasha and Trita, footnote 7. Vyasa was made the Brahmana priest, Srila Jiva Goswami mentions. But so you're going to have your Hota, who's actually the one putting things into the fire, the offerings themselves, mm-hmm. like that, and that whole, the rituals that go with that. The Udgata, who's chanting the mantras by which then you're putting things into the fire, or performing any ritual that's connected with that. And then the Advaryu, who is going to arrange all the things for the sacrifice and any, you know, preliminary worship mantras or any rituals to be done. Right? So those three, they're the ones that carry out the sacrifice. So setting up the sacrifice, running the sacrifice, and the mantras for the sacrifice. Right? The Udgata? So the sacrifice itself has to be performed in those rituals, but they have to be performed along with chanting. Otherwise, what's the point? Because chanting is an essential point of all Dharma. Mm-hmm. Right? So then the Udgata, because if you have to do the ritual and focus on the chanting, you might forget something. But so the Udgata, his business is just remembering the mantras and what's next, because the ritual goes with the mantra. Mm-hmm. Right? There's a mantra, then there's a ritual that goes with it. So as he chants the mantra, that's the ritual that you perform. That I'm performing this ritual, then there goes a mantra. Does that make sense? So, if he starts one ritual and the Udgata starts chanting another mantra, it's his business to adjust to the mantra. Does that make sense? Because the name is the main thing. So even we can see in the sacrifice, it's still about the name, not about the ritual. We'll say, oh, that's ritualistic. It depends on how you look at it. If you only see that, yes. Right? And then the Advaryu, then he's going to set up everything. So that means there's mantras chanted, there's rituals done, but it's all preliminary. Does that make sense? So he does all that. So that means he knows all that aspect. So each one is its own area. So then he's chosen them. Then Vyasadeva is made the Brahma. Brahma, he knows all three of them, and he's, you know, the one directly watching that these three persons are doing all this. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Yeah.
So, there's some qualification required for a good custodian.
There's a qualification required, yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. It means what mantras they know, what rituals they know. Like in these big, big ones like that, then the Hota, what he knows is Rig Veda. Because you call the Lord and do that through Rig Veda. Mm-hmm. Right? The mantras being chanted, those are from Samaveda. And then the setting up and all that, that's from Yajurveda. Okay. with that. So they have to know those Vedas. But the Brahma, he has to be a tree Veda. He has to know all three. Yes. Why we're saying three is because the fourth one, the Tarva is generally not used. Though it's not that they're not there, those priests and chanting mantras and doing things. it's not based on the Atarva.
Maharaj, here the Sumanto, he's out of the four, he's for Atharva Veda.
Sumantu.
Jaimini for Sama, Paila for Rig, and Vaishampayana for Yajur.
Jaimini, Paila,
Vaishampayana, and Sumantu. These are the four people.
Sumantu here, okay, after Bhardwaj and stuff. Okay, they're the head of each of the sections for that. Okay, so that means you get all those. So only in big ones, then they'll have all four Vedas. Otherwise, you're using three Vedas and quite big. But otherwise, if you're just doing a regular, smaller thing like that, then you'll use the particular Veda you're from. And to do all, everything. So, okay. He also selected Vishvamitra, Vamanadev, Sumati, Jaimini, Kratu, Paila, Parasara, as well as Garga, Vaishampayana, Atarva, Kasyapa, Domya, Rama of the Bhargavas, Asuri, Vitihotra, Madhut Chanda, Virasena, and Akrita Varana. O King, others who were invited included Drona, Bhishma, Kripa, Dhritarashtra with his sons, the wise Vidura, and many other Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras, all eager to witness the sacrifice. Indeed, all the kings came there with their entourages. Right? So they come with everything. It's not just he just shows up on his own, right? In a taxi or something. Right? He comes with the whole entourage. Srila Sanatana Goswami comments. Sending Nakula to Hastinapur, as approved by Krishna, he invited other sages such as Drona. Others invited were Bahlika and Somadatta. So they are the great grandfathers, right? The sons of Dhritarashtra were Duryodhana and others. The first members listed were most exalted at the sacrifice. Vidura was skilled at accounting for goods dispensed, Mahamatihi, right? So he'd take care of that because you have all the things, now you have to manage it. How much you need, this much ghee, this much this and that and for everything, and so who gets what and everything, because you have, so he would take care of that aspect. Tatra Vyavakarash Chasi Vidura Sarva Dharma Vit. Vidura, Nomer of Dharma, was the dispenser of funds, because he'd know exactly how to balance it, who should get what, how it should work, and everything like that. Mahabharata. Sarva Dharma Vit means he knew all procedures of charity, according to time, place, and recipient, or was fixed in bhakti to the Lord. Because now with all these different things, there's charity constantly going on. Because of these big sacrifices, you're giving charity many times, just like we see in the wedding, that the groom comes out, the father of the bride then worships him and gives him charity at that time. Then the daughter comes out, then she goes around like that. There's a few preliminary things, and at that time, then again, the father gives something like that. Then they'll go along, and at the end there, and then different people take part at different times in their ceremony, and depending on who they are, then they're getting something for that. Right? Then you get at the end, then before the final mantras, then the priests are getting something. So this is in a simple, just samskar. So these are very complex yagyas. So at all the different things that they're going on, they're constantly getting charity for all these different things. They've done that particular part, then they get that charity. Because in its own, it's complete, but at the same time, it's part of the bigger thing. So, does that make sense? It's not going to work. Without chanting, without charity. So you see, that's why Bhagavatam is focusing on these main points. We're thinking, what about the ritual? Because these are the main points of the ritual. The ritual is just an opportunity to glorify the Lord, be engaged in activities connected to the Lord, worship the Lord, his associates, things connected to him, and to give in charity. Right? So what do you call it? Sacrifice, charity, and austerity. So austerity, perform his duties, to be fixed on that, then to perform the sacrifice, which means he's giving benefit to others, and give charity. So that's actually what it's all about. Right? It's not about the ritual. The point is that the Rajasuya gives the most opportunity to do the most austerity, charity, and sacrifice. That's why it's the greatest. Not that it's got the most complex things and that. You understand? So we're not talking about, nerds or geeks here. Right? We're talking about the devotional aspect. Yeah? People miss the point, like we see King Riga. He thought it was all about the ritual, though he did all these things nicely, but he didn't understand the ultimate point. Right. Brahmanas and others from other states gathered to see the sacrifice. They came on their own or were invited by messengers. So that means they came, the ones who were invited, they had their special places like that, but it means that those who came on their own also got very nice arrangements, so they considered that. Does that make sense? It's just like, okay, you're inviting some special guests over, like that, for prasad, but it's not that you don't have arrangements for people that show up with them and other, your own friends and relatives and all this and that. It's all part of the thing. So, yes, you invited over 20, four people, but you're actually cooking for 20. Does that make sense? So, because you cook for 20, 25 can eat. On the order of Yudhishthir, Sahadev said to the messengers, invite Brahmanas and Kshatriyas also. Bring respectable Vaishyas and Shudras. Right? So it'll be who's prominent. Because you bring the Brahmins and Kshatriyas, you invite whoever's there, whoever, is willing to come. So even you invited all of them, that would be a certain amount. But when you get into Vaishyas and Shudras, because they are the volume of the populace, so it'll be prominent ones. Because otherwise, if you bring all them, it's like, how do you do that? The ordinary Kshatriyas by birth were there. Kings were special, right? So this is a point: is that those who are Kshatriyas by birth means they have the nature of it, but that doesn't mean they're kings, right? They have the Kshatriya conditioning, so they work within the administration with who is sitting on the throne, who is the king. Like Maharaj Yudhishthir is the king. The other four Pandavas aren't kings as such. They're dealt with like kings because how they act and do, because they're supporting the king. So they have that position. Right? Or Duryodhana, his brothers are then Kshatriyas. Right? So they're Kshatriyas, he's the king. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that means the Kshatriyas, they got a nice place, but the kings, they got a special place. Or their arrangements, if they sat with their people, they'd have a special seat. Like if this king with his entourage are there, they're all got their nice place, but the king has a more special seat. So you can understand, you want to talk management, this is management. All their ministers were also there. Sukadev calls to Parikit in joy or amazement, right? Because it's this, and that's one king. So, and you have so many kings, like those 20,000 kings that were, saved from Jarasandha. They're showing up and they're coming with their entourage. So you're talking about millions and millions of people, for this arrangement. And that means, food and everything. It's all happening. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book. Kings from different parts of the world, along with their ministers and secretaries, were also invited to see the great sacrifice performed by King Yudhishthira. And the citizens, comprising learned brahmanas, chivalrous kshatriyas, and well-to-do vaishyas, and faithful shudras, also all visited the ceremony. Right? One is that meaning that these are the qualities that people had, and that way they're coming to the ceremony. Or those specifically that had these, they were coming to the ceremony. Mm-hmm. Right? So we see it's like when they did the arrangements for like Draupadi Swayamvar, or for showing off the talents of the Kshatriya princes after their training by Dronacharya. Then, you know, because it's in a regional place, everyone from that place could attend. So everybody, all Shudras, everybody could come. But they will have to, you know, dress properly, behave properly, and like this. They'll have people there. You're not behaving properly, you'll be tossed out. You know, so there is a decorum. And so that there you might get, but this is something more specific. So then his local people may be coming. But you won't have Shudras coming from all over. But if there is a famous Shudra from some kingdom or this or that, or a famous, you know, then they may be specifically invited. But otherwise, from your own kingdom, then you'll invite these people, they'll be the special guests. And then others that just come, then they have the, you know, the stadium-like arrangements that the regular citizens can also then come like that. But, you know, everybody else gets the first, so it may be, you need binoculars. Yeah. Yes, guests are always important. Any program that you have, then it's important that Manu mentions that you have to invite guests by who will fit into that context. You can't just invite anyone you like. Let's say you're very eclectic, so you have a wide range of friends that have nothing to do with each other, right? So you can't invite them all to a program and expect it to be intimate. A formal program, yes, you can invite them all. But you have to know what the program is. If it's just, you know, you're going to sit, take the shot and all that, you have to invite according to the groups how they can relate to each other. That is a duty. It's not that you just as you please. No, they have to match. So that's why it's very important. So you see, people are into these things, and the formal things, they're very specific about who's that, who's going to sit where, who's sitting with who, you know, how it's going to be arranged, like that, because that's very important. So they have to know, and that's why he has told Sahadev, because Sahadev is the one we see. Nakula is the one that receives them, like that, but Sahadev is the one that sits them. One, he's done the invitations, so he already knows who goes where. Because you can't stick two inimical kings next to each other, this, that. Someone has to think of all that. But to receive them and all that and all their people and all that, that's a different thing. That takes a full endeavor. And to seat them, the arrangements needed, that's a full endeavor. That's why it's two different jobs. You know, if it's in your house, okay, you can greet them at the door and then sit them down. You don't have to have two different people. Does that make sense? But if you have a lot of guests, then someone will be sitting there and greet them and, you know, where their coat goes and this and that. They need to use the bathroom or anything that they need. They take care of that thing. Then after that is, yes, you go, you know, go in the living room and that. Then someone there says, yeah, come sit here or there or like that, and takes care of them while they're there. Does that make sense? So that's just, so this is really big, so it's not like that. So Sahadev is inviting them and Sahadev is seating them. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued. The Brahmin priest then plowed the sacrificial ground with golden plowshares and initiated King Yudhishthir for the sacrifice in accordance with the tradition set down by standard authorities. Right? So they didn't just make something up because they're the big rishis, so I can do whatever I like. So they followed the standard authorities. So this means it starts. They've invited, they come, they plow the earth. Then having plowed the earth means they have to pick a suitable place that's actually suitable for that sacrifice. You know, you can't have like an old dead tree sitting there, or vultures, you know, that they made a nest in that tree. No, it has to be an auspicious place. Right? Then at the auspicious time, then these Brahmins, then they're, you know, with the bullocks, then they plow the ground, or with the bulls, they plow the ground. And so then, but they're using golden plowshares. They're not using just some old funky thing, you know, a wooden one or a stainless steel one. They're using gold, like that. Then plowing the ground, because ground, when it's plowed, it becomes purified. That's you know, it's just like when Manu describes how different you purify different items by plowing the earth gets purified. Right? There's something impure there. By plowing, then it goes in, it gets fed, the air, you know, it starts the process of purification. So then they'll build the Yagshala and do all those, and that will take, so this whole thing takes time. Right? You know, it's not that they started plowing there and then the whole yagya is done by lunch. That's only because, you know, no one can tolerate going any longer, so. The utensils used in the sacrifice were made of gold, right? Not gold in color, or, you know, how you say, you took gold paint and painted all the plastic stuff like that. No, it was solid gold. Just as in the ancient Rajasuya performed by Lord Varuna. Right? So then there's, it's been done before by Varuna. Right? Indra, Brahma, Shiva, and many other planetary rulers. The Siddhas and Gandharvas with their entourage. So not only the kings come with their entourage, all these from these other planets. The Vidyadharas, great serpents, sages, yakshas, rakshasas, celestial birds, kinaras, charnas, and earthly kings. All were invited, and indeed they all came from every direction to the Rajasuya sacrifice of King Yudhishthira. Right, so you can see is the invitation and the seating, it becomes a little bigger than we thought, but it also means all the receiving. And then Krishna took care of the shoes, Bhima took care of the prasad. You can imagine cooking, you have to cook for everybody, you know, and arrange that. You know, so. Indeed, they all came from every direction to the Rajasuya sacrifice of King Yudhishthira, the son of Pandu. That's why I mentioned before, no one's actually amazed on one level because he's a devotee of the Lord. So such a great devotee, he can arrange this. No materialist can arrange this. Because the only time we see it was done before, you know, that's mentioned here was in ancient times by Varuna. You know, so he's a demigod with all his arrangement. Then he could arrange. So here, Yudhishthira is arranging something that generally is never done. How is that? Because he's a devotee. And so therefore then the other point is we're worried about getting material facility because we're a devotee. Only devotees can get material facility. Really. They were not in the least astonished. Okay, here's the point. Astonished to see the opulence of the sacrifice, since it was quite appropriate for a devotee of Lord Krishna. The priests, as powerful as gods, performed the Rajasuya sacrifice for King Yudhishthira in accordance with the Vedic injunctions. Right? It's not that, oh, we chant Hare Krishna, we don't care for the rules, that kind of thing. Just as the demigods had previously performed it for Varuna. So just as he had done it, Varuna, then now King Yudhishthira did it. So it's exactly the same. Same opulence, same everything. So what the demigods would require the demigods to be able to do this, King Yudhishthira did it. Now one may be amazed, how can an earthly king? But no, he's a devotee. Devotees are greater than the demigods. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, the Brahmin priests and sages in charge of the sacrificial ceremony constructed the sacrificial arena as usual with a plow of gold, and the initiated King Yudhishthira as the performer of the great sacrifice. In accordance with the Vedic rituals, right? So, means he's initiated into this as the Yajamana. So then, for that time, then those priests and that, they are his gurus. He has to follow. When the sacrifice is over, then that particular connection is not there anymore. Of course, you have a relationship of that you've done service together. That remains, but that particular thing that you're the guru at this point. No, you were the guru for that sacrifice. So the Vedic principle is that there is authority and you follow authority, that's there in everything. Long years earlier, when Varuna had performed a similar sacrifice, all the sacrificial utensils had been made of gold. Similarly, in the Rajasuya sacrifice of King Yudhishthira, all the utensils required for the sacrifice were golden. All the respectable sages, kings, and demigods who assembled there agreed unanimously that King Yudhishthira was quite competent to take the responsibility for performing the Rajasuya sacrifice. No one was in disagreement of this fact. Right? Because they could say, how could he do this? He's not a demigod, this, that. No, they all thought he can do this. You know, and we have kings and demigods, everybody. Because he was a great devotee of the Lord. Because of it, so he's known as a great devotee. That's why. Not just a good king or a good manager. He's a great devotee. So that's known throughout the universe. So because he was a great devotee, everyone thoroughly knew the position of King Yudhishthira because he was a great devotee of Lord Krishna. No accomplishment was extraordinary for him. The learned Brahmins and priests saw to it that the sacrifice by Maharaj Yudhishthira was performed in exactly the same way as it had been in bygone ages by the demigod Varuna. Right? So they say it was done exactly in that way, because that's what the Shastra says.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Śrīla Prabhupāda ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Devi ki.